Welcome to another episode of the Eagles Water Cooler. We are joined with everybody tonight to talk about the Eagles season, sort of from a macro point of view. The Eagles are 9-7 at present through 16 games after what was really a roller coaster year. But it's good to get together with you guys and talk about it. I'm looking forward to, I guess, what will wind up being a mostly meaningless game tomorrow. The Eagles are going to be hosting the Cowboys to close out their 2021 season. But there's speculation about them resting their starters, Cowboys resting their starters, and both teams sort of looking ahead to the playoffs, having clinched their berths. But how are we feeling tonight, fellas?
Not too bad, Chris. Happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday, indeed. So we're talking to you the Friday the 7th, right before, as I said, the last weekend of the NFL regular season. And it's pretty wild where the Eagles wound up, considering where they've been. So at one point this year, and I can remember this game, Julian, my wife and I were visiting some friends and watched the Eagles go out to Las Vegas and really just get embarrassed. So at that point, they were 2-5. And to think now that they're 9-7, this is really historic. The Eagles have never made the playoffs after a 2-5 start. But I want to start by talking about Nick Sirianni a little bit and the experience of him being the head coach from the hiring and his name sort of being an outlier, the way his first press conference went. His t-shirts, his rah-rah, you know, Philly sort of stuff, the flowers and growing and roots and all that. The guy clinched a playoff berth in his first year as a head coach and faced a lot of adversity, a lot of injuries. I guess I'm just curious, like, how did we get here and what role did Sirianni play? We'll start with him and then we'll sort of go down the list of Jalen Hurts and the other major players, but how do you feel like we got here and what role did Sirianni play in it?
I'll jump in, Chris. I don't know. I've been racking my brain and trying to figure out the source of this success. I think it's many different factors and people involved, but you know, Sirianni's is at the helm here. And so he deserves a lot of credit. I think it was early on in the season, there were some ugly games, you know, that first game against Dallas, followed by the blowout against Kansas City. Things looked pretty bleak, an ugly win in Carolina. So, you know, what he was able to do, though, is, you know, and I don't know if he listened to the fans or sports talk radio, but he clearly heard the rumblings to start running the ball more. And he did. And he adapted game plans and he made that a focus and, you know, built a playbook around it and a game plan around it. So, you know, I think all credit goes to that switch. Right. And to, you know, I think we were the number one team in number one rushing team by far, probably this year. And that was a big part of the success, you know, for the second half of the season. And, you know, I don't know what, you know, other than that recognition, what he does, I don't know if we have a good glimpse of what he does behind the scenes. It seems like everybody likes him, but does everybody love him? Is he like that big of a motivator, or is he just a great assessor of talent and he plays to the strengths? Like Jalen Hurts is not, his strength is not throwing the ball and throwing the ball deep. So adjust and, you know, let's run the ball more and put him in more, let's roll him out, put him in more favorable positions. The offensive line has been the main strength. So let's let them run block. They've said, and they've been vocal about, you know, they like to run block. So I don't know. But you know, the root of this question and discussion is Sirianni deserves, you know, credit and praise. And, you know, he's gotten this team that a lot of people before the season started had at 3 wins, 4 wins, which I think we all thought was like pretty ridiculous, but I don't know. I think we were talking 5-6 wins, maybe 7 would be an okay season. But, you know, to be 9 wins in and, you know, on the doorstep of the playoffs is awesome.
Yeah, and to go through periods of doubt in Sirianni and for him to have turned it around, I think Andrew really identified the running game, and I think the willingness to adjust were the two factors there that were sort of biggest. Matt, what do you have to add to that?
Yeah, I think we can look at the Raiders game as kind of the change in the season. One fact I want to point out, up until the Raiders game, we were averaging 34.7 throws per game and running 16.5 times per game. The four games after that, we were averaging running the ball 43.8 times per game and throwing just 19.8 times per game. And that stayed that way for the rest of the season. Listen, we were really tough on Nick Sirianni early on. And I think that's from a fan perspective. We just had a bad taste in our mouths from the Wentz and the Peterson fallout. And it was kind of just like, who's this jabroni from the Colts coming in here? You know, I was listening to Sports Talk Radio earlier this week, and they did bring up a good point that, you know, Sirianni starts out on a Zoom call as the head coach. I think that'd be awkward for anyone starting out that way. And the fact that that was, you know, so polarizing to the fans, and we just immediately jumped on that as, you know, it, horrible interview, guy doesn't know what he's doing. You know, he just started out on the wrong foot, and maybe we just didn't give him a chance because of that one interview. Looking back on that, you know, we have seen him adjust, and he has, you know, adapted to the league. We also got to look at some of the losses that we've had this season. Yes, there's been some bad ones. Cowboys was a blowout. That Giants game, I don't want to talk about, but I'm looking here and Chiefs, Buccaneers, Cowboys, Patriots, all in the playoffs, possibly Chargers, Raiders, 49ers to make the playoffs as well. That's losses to a lot of playoff caliber teams. You know, I like some feedback on what that says to Sirianni as well. I'll throw that to the group as well. But, yeah, does Sirianni still have something to prove? Yeah, but I still want to see him for the next 2 to 3 seasons prove that. I think he's earned some more time in Philadelphia.
And let's shelf the discussion a little bit about playoff caliber teams and better quarterbacks. So we talk about Jonathan Gannon, because I was going to kind of use that as a launching point to talk about the fact that the Eagles have played some lesser competition and been able to get their record to where it is sort of through that route after a more difficult start. But Mike, let's get your thoughts on Sirianni and his role in the Eagles' success so far in 2021.
Yeah, I think we've said it. He's been pivotal in his adjustments during the season to play to the Eagles' strengths, which has really been his, you know, I think his best thing that he's been able to do as a coach. The other thing, you know, he right as he got here, he did have a terrible first interview, and that kind of wrecked him with the fans, like Matt was saying. But he did do a really smart thing. He got all the veterans on the team to, like, buy into him, and that was a really good coaching point on his part. The one thing I was going to pose to the group was, and this might only apply to Sirianni, but I'm going to try to see if it correlates to some kind of a trend. Is there something to making the most of the players that you have, as opposed to trying to build a team with what you think you need to win? So using what you have as opposed to what you think you need to still put in on the team to win. And I'm just going to say Chip Kelly's first year as an Eagles coach, we had a winning record. I think we ended up going to the playoffs. Doug Peterson, year two, we win the Super Bowl with basically a team that he had inherited for remnants of the Chip Kelly era. Now Nick Sirianni comes in, inherits a team as well, and got a playoff bid. Do you think there's something to making, you know, using what you have and making the most of it to winning. I feel like we might have lost Chris here.
Oh, I thought he was about to jump in.
No, I caught the very end of it. The whole middle part I missed, but I caught the very end of it. I think there is something to be said about that, because I think the Eagles are a team that don't have any sort of outstanding performers in any domain. I think there have been sort of isolated experiences of it, but there really hasn't been that. And I think he has done a good job of making a lot of that. And I think that's a great point to bring up. And I'll certainly spin that around to everybody else if anyone has more to add to that. But to add to what Matt said, I wrote this down as he was talking, you know, Sirianni was going to catch heat from the Philadelphia fans regardless because of his first press conference, but he does come here amidst the Wentz dilemma. Wentz is still here when Sirianni first arrived. So just timeline-wise, he was up against it just from when he came in, just the circumstances of when he came in. Mike makes a great point in saying that he gets the veteran buy-in. And I think to be able to do that early on for, I think it was OTAs, if I'm not mistaken, I think that made a big difference as the season progressed, their belief in him. So I don't know. I think those things, and then also I just want to say him getting on Jalen Hurts. I really like seeing on the sideline him kind of yelling at Jalen Hurts and getting on his case when he's not playing well, getting on Miles Sanders after that bad fumble. You know, I don't think it's the way all the time. I don't think you should be that way all the time, but I like to see that. And I kind of like to see it in a coach earlier on in his career, because I think it was at a time where Jalen wasn't playing well and it was something he responded to. Andrew.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Nick, the guy that we see in post-game interviews and, you know, in front of the camera, is definitely not the Nick that's on the sidelines, right? Like, he's very vocal. He's in the ear of the refs. He's vocal to the team. It's just he happens to be, you know, a poor interview, really. I think he's getting there. I think the post games get better and better. I still don't think he really says much. That's the nature of a, you know, an NFL coach, I think, more times than not. But I think we are starting to see kind of who Nick is as a coach versus, you know, his presence in front of the camera. So it's been interesting to see that portion. Matt?
Yeah, I agree with that. And Mike, you bring up a good point. He had the veterans buy in. Let's not forget, though, we're the third youngest team in the league with a first-year head coach and first-year defensive coordinator. So these veterans are still young guys for the most part. And yet he was able to get the best out of, you know, some young talent this year to make us playoff bound. I think I speak for everyone here that no one had expectations of the playoffs, and they have, passed our expectations.
Yeah, and they passed, the success or limited success of last year's team after all the debacle that was what Matt mentioned earlier between Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson and the fallout of that regime. And a big part of that was the emergence of Jalen Hurts, who we'll get to now. And I just find it, you know, this phrase came to my mind that he's just a really likable leader. He seems like a guy who people gravitate toward. Obviously, everyone now has seen the footage of the railing collapsing at FedEx Field, and, you know, how he played it cool, helps the fan up, takes pictures with people. He has this certain presence about him where he's very likable, and you kind of want to see him succeed. And that's where I'm at with him. But he still has room to grow in his game. And Andrew spoke to that. His throws are not his strength. But I think that this comes up a couple times in podcasts throughout this season where we're talking about, and I think Matt brought it up first, like, can Jalen learn to make those throws? And because I think he's a guy you want to root for, I'm pretty bought in at this point. I want to see what this guy can do. And I think he's kind of earned the right to be able to start for the Eagles next year. There are some plays that really stand out in my mind. I just wrote a couple down here, leaving the pocket, but still being able to kind of stay behind the line of scrimmage in the second half of the season here, plays where earlier he would have just scrambled and gotten the yards he could, sort of scrambling to get out of the pocket and get the space he needs to make a throw, but being mindful of the line of scrimmage and making downfield throws, particularly to Goddard and Smith. A couple big plays to Greg Ward over the last couple weeks, scrambling. That play falling backward, tossing it to Boston Scott for him to run into the end zone. I mean, the guy has really had such a presence, and his play has not been consistent the whole year, but he's just somebody that I believe in as a fan. And I don't know if it's sort of fool's gold, but I'm going to start by saying I think he has earned the right to be the guy next season. But for sort of more present purposes, we're headed to the playoffs to play a probably a very good opposing quarterback, a Brady, a Matt Stafford, a Kyler Murray. So, you know, how does Jalen Hurts kind of compare, and what does he do, and does he show up? First of all, I just really want to see him stay healthy, but I want to see him be able to command the offense earlier in the game. That's the biggest thing I want to be able to see. And it can be through his arm, it can be through his legs, it can be through a combo, but there's something that happens early in games where, for the most part, if you take this season as a sample size, he's not a player who seems to click right away. He's a guy who kind of has to get into a rhythm, and then he gets in a rhythm and finds his direction in the game. And there's not going to be that time afforded by some of these other teams. And the Eagles recently have not been playing teams that really make them pay for their mistakes or make them pay for coming out in slow starts, but playoff teams will. So I put that to the rest of the group. Do you believe in Jalen Hurts as the starter next year? And what do you want to see from him in a game coming up in the wild card round, because that's where he's headed? And for as long as Carson Wentz was here, we saw him once for Mike and I were there, I think five plays against the Seahawks, something like that. And somebody can check me on that, but it wasn't a whole lot of time after all that experience of him thinking, or us thinking, sorry, as fans, that he was going to be the franchise guy. He really had such limited playoff experience. So this is huge for Jalen Hurts in just his second year. So again, what do you think in terms of him earning the right to start next year, and what do you want to see from him in his first playoff appearance? Let's start with Matt.
Yeah, that's a good point, Chris. You know, in his first year, you had Peterson just using him as a gadget guy, and then Sirianni, you know, makes him a true quarterback, you see just kind of night and day. Listen, he leads all quarterbacks in rushing attempts, in rushing yards, in rushing touchdowns. And so, yeah, this guy can use his feet, and he can make the pass when we need him to make the pass. I think no one will question his running ability. You know, there has been a couple throws that I think some of us would want back, but he can still get the ball downfield when need be. I think he is the guy going forward, and I think him and Sirianni are just going to continue to build this rapport that will help them develop their game together, both being young. What we do have to watch out for is the league's going to have a year of tape on Jalen Hurts. They're going to continue to spy on him, so he can't get out of the quarterback, can't get out of the pocket. Teams are going to have more ability to adapt to Jalen Hurts, but as Sirianni and Jalen Hurts grow together, I think the sky's the limit there. So I want to see him move forward as the starting quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles.
All right, man. I definitely agree with you as well. I think his play this year and the constant improvement too. I mean, we see a much better Jalen Hurts now at the end of the year than we did at the beginning of the year. He continues to progress, and he continues to just be a gamer. I think like that's like an intangible. It's hard to put a stat on that, but he really does just seem to have this like gamer gene. I don't know if it was, I forget what team or game it was, but he rushed for a touchdown when we desperately needed one to seal off the game maybe 4 or 6 weeks ago. His back shoulder throw to Greg Ward was just like absolutely clutch. That has to be my favorite throw of Jalen Hurts from the whole year. just clutch. And on top of that, I don't think he needs to really change what he's doing by that much. Like, his running ability has changed the dynamic of our running game in general. We've become a really run dominant team. And I think a lot of that has to do with Jalen. All he has to do is continue to build his catalog of throws, really. He can just continue to build. And based on what we've seen, I don't see why he wouldn't continue to get better at that. He seems like a smart and articulate, I would say high football IQ type guy. The passion's there. The work ethic is there. I don't see why he wouldn't, more time wouldn't give him a higher ceiling. Andrew, let's throw it to you.
Yeah, so just to counter that point, we've never seen that before. We've seen similar quarterbacks to Jalen Hurts in the past, and we haven't seen the evolution that people think. Like, I mean, more recently, Lamar Jackson, right, wins the MVP. This guy's dynamic, looks like he has it all, but, you know, he hasn't made the step, and it seems like there is this ceiling for the style of quarterback that Jalen Hurts is. He's not, you know, this – I don't know, running quarterback, throwing on the run. He's not a pocket passer. Is he able to create plays and make dynamic plays when he's in there? Absolutely. And to the base point of the conversation, yes, he does deserve to start this upcoming season, but he doesn't have much competition. And the draft pick, other than Kenny Pickett, there's nobody that I would want even to smell as a starting quarterback. So it's not like you're going to make a move there. Yes, there's some free agent names that might be enticing, but I think overall with where Sirianni is, with where Jalen is, with where this team is, it does make sense for him to be the starter. My biggest concern is he going to get you to a championship? Can he win the Super Bowl? And I don't know. I think there are a lot of holes in his game that concern me for the long term. I think for right now, this season.
Okay, so just.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
I was just going to say, just to kind of break that down a little bit and kind of hone in on the question, instead of thinking on the Super Bowl level, which we should be when we're thinking about him as a franchise guy, but for this season, given that they've earned a playoff berth, what do you, Andrew, want to see from Jalen Hurts in his first playoff appearance? What's going to sort of start to build that confidence a little bit more? Because it's a big spot for him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's going to be anything that he's going to do that's going to be that surprising. If he throws for 300 yards or even, you know, 250 yards, that's going to be surprising. But I think what we're going to see is what we've seen all season, especially recently, where it's, you know, pretty gritty. And I think we all agree. We see the heart. We see the energy. We see the quiet leadership, the speak softly, carry a big stick kind of mentality. Like, I think people are bought in on him. But what is he going to do that is going to be that surprising? I don't know. It would have to be kind of earth shattering. Maybe he runs for 150 yards. But I don't think there's not going to be anything that he does with his arm that's going to win the game, whoever it is.
I think for me, I think you're right on a lot of fronts. I think for me, it's probably a combination of being able to get a fast start and then also him not reverting back to just taking off one read and just taking off. I don't want to see any regression because of the bigger spotlight. And I don't really expect it. I think the guys, you know, played in big enough spots in college. Mike, did you have something on this?
Well, just sorry, yeah, real quick, Mike, I don't think.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I don't anticipate seeing regression either. This guy's played in big spots, as you were about to say, and I think Mike's going to comment on too. But, what does he need to do to step up to really show you that he is the guy? I don't think this game alone, even though it is a playoff game, is gonna determine that.
Oh no, it's more kind of, it's not, the question is kind of posed together, I guess, but it's not that they're kind of linked. So it's kind of, do you believe he's the guy for next year? And I think we're all saying at least for next year, yeah. But what do you want to see, given that they did get a playoff berth and they are going to play in this wild card round? What do you want to see from him, given everything that you know, and given that you don't want to see regression? What's that next step for him in your eyes, or Mike's, you know, whoever wants to respond?
I was just going to say, one thing that would really be nice to see, the biggest game of his career so far, is to avoid making mental mistakes. I Jalen Hurts has thrown some questionable balls, especially in the first half, especially the first quarter. The decision making just, you know, he's made some bad throws, risky throws. I'd like to see that be eliminated. I don't think he needs to reinvent the wheel. We are, you know, run the ball, you know, have some designed runs for Jalen, have the running backs, you know, carry the workload of the offense, and then have a high completion percentage in the passes that he does throw. I think if he can do those things, eliminate mental mistakes, complete the ball well, and just stick to your running game, I think, you know, that's what I'm looking for out of Jalen. Matt.
Good points, Mike. And just to piggyback off that, yeah, he's made some mental mistakes early. I think the team for the last few weeks has started out slow in that first half, and then they go in halftime, they figure it out, and they come out with, you know, an adapted game plan that has helped them win the last few weeks. I don't think we can start out slow in a playoff caliber game. That other team is going to be ready to go from the first snap. So, I would like him to avoid the risky plays. I want to see him be a game manager. I want to control the clock, and that's on him and Sirianni. And I think if he can do that, not make those mental mistakes, we can play spoiler. We can walk away with a win there in that first playoff game. Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately what it sounds like is, and I think we can all agree, that if it's a fast start, if he limits the mental mistakes and he manages the game, win or lose, I think we can probably come out of that with, you know, okay, and like a satisfied impression of Jalen. Does that feel right for everybody?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think as far as throwing the ball, I think, you know, it's really a matter of a couple seconds in terms of maturity that I've seen this season where he's willing to hang in the pocket just a couple more seconds to let Goddard get open, a couple more seconds to let Devontae Smith get open. It's not, you know, a drastic difference, but the line will give him that time. Brian Westbrook has actually been doing some really cool breakdowns on Twitter this year and just showing how much time Jalen has, how much space Jalen has that the line is providing him. They're a huge strength.
The line's been good. The line's been good.
But that was just one thing I wanted to bring up. Mike, did you have something? Or Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk line real quick. You know, I love talking line, and we just brought it up. So we got to take into consideration those first few games there. It was a revolving door for Jalen Hurts, who was playing in front of him. And I have the article here. Give me one sec.
We can circle back.
I was just gonna jump in and say
podcasting. This is superb. Go ahead, Maddie. I'm sorry. Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
I'm good, Mike. Just sorry about that. We had Brandon Brooks on injured reserve in week two. Sayamalu goes down week three. We have Mulata missed two games, and we have Lane Johnson missed three games. Since then, he's had a healthy five guys in front of him for the most part. I think we lost Dickerson as well. That's something to gain confidence behind when you have a consistent line for a quarterback. And we look at what Wentz went through last year and some of Jalen Hurts. I mean, it was just a turnstile up front, and we've had some more consistency on the offensive line. And that shows why we've been so successful running and why Jalen Hurts has been so successful. Mike?
Yeah, no, the only thing I was going to add was just going to be a caveat that we could absolutely lose this playoff game and still love Jalen Hurts's performance, the offense's performance. There are some teams that we could face that we really don't have much of a chance beating, moving past, but we can still look to see these things like we've just described from the birds, even if it does wind up in being a loss.
Yeah, we could see those things, see that growth, and it could still wind up being a loss, but a confidence building loss in terms of looking at Jalen Hurts. That's a great point, Mike. Let's move on from Hurts to talk about Jonathan Gannon. I've really struggled with this guy a lot. And of course, we can point to the question of, does he deserve to be back? Because I think that's been talked about with Sirianni, but I think the confidence is there with him now, although when it was 2-5, it looked pretty bleak. He might have been a one and done, but was able to turn it around. Hurts has restored confidence in the fan base. But Jonathan Gannon, sort of by the numbers, has been successful, mostly against teams and quarterbacks that are not playoff bound or considered competitive. So far this season, though, the Eagles have 12 interceptions, 28 sacks, 15 forced fumbles. I mean, those are pretty decent numbers considering the Eagles, especially when it comes to turnovers the last few years, lack of numbers in those departments. But as a watching experience, it's just extremely frustrating. He seems too conservative and early in the game, letting quarterbacks like Tyler Heineke or even Jake Fromm in his first couple throws out there, making them or allowing them to connect instead of applying some pressure. The performances by the defense against Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, Derek Carr, these were not good performances by the defense. And that's the caliber of quarterback or better that they're going to be facing. So it's concerning for me as a defensive coordinator that came in with a lot of clout because, again, by the numbers, it's a little Schwartzian in the sense that by the numbers, he looks okay, but in our watching experience, you find yourself frustrated regardless of the opponent. It's just that when you stand back, it doesn't look so bad on paper. I don't know if that's been your guys' experience or if this has come up for you at all, but Gannon's performance in this as a DC in this playoff game is going to be vital for me considering whether or not he should come back because he's been on the fence. I've been on the fence rather with him all year long. So I'll send it around. Gannon, and your thoughts on him against better competition or just kind of in general, this enigma of Jonathan Gannon. Andrew, go ahead.
Yeah. Comparing him to Schwartz is interesting. Cause it's like the numbers seem good, but it doesn't really hit the eye test. I don't know this guy, you know, do we give him the same leeway that we give Sirianni, seeing as he is a first year defensive coordinator, I believe, right? I mean, he's been a defensive backs coach, but I don't know if he's ever been the sole coordinator. So he's stepping up into a big role in and of himself. I think he's really focused on D-backs most of his career. And maybe that's also, you know, attributing to the success that you see with, I mean, Maddox is having a career year, Slay's a Pro Bowler, Nelson's nice on the outside. So I don't know, maybe he's got something there, but I think we've also seen a diminished, you know, defensive line presence. Our linebackers are what they've been for the last several years and kind of ho-hum, but I don't know. I'm not necessarily, I don't know if I've seen enough bad or enough good to really even know if I want to move on from him or not. So I'm kind of in this limbo with him. You know, we collectively have gotten to a point where we've gotten to the playoffs, and I think the defense has impacted the games, many games. So I think he probably deserves more credit than we're giving him, but I would agree. It's this eye test where it's like, why are we playing so soft? Why are we always playing zone? Why are we never blitzing? And these are some of the things I think that we've been frustrated with, even with Schwartzy, and that's why I think the comparison is interesting. Am I ready to move on? I don't know. I don't think we can make that decision. Now, if we go into, let's say we match up against Arizona and we get our doors blown off, is that on him or is that just because we're playing a superior team and they beat us on all facets? It'll be interesting. I think it is a good benchmark, a barometer, this playoff game where he stands. Maybe it's a bend don't break type of defense, which I think we've seen in the past, but I'm not ready at this point to say that, you know, that we should move on from him. I think he's part of this coaching crew, this really young coaching crew that have come in together. They seem to be kind of, you know, piecemealing some things together, and who knows, maybe he's just as big a part of this team as Sirianni is, and in terms of building a culture of
of winning and success. So, Matt, how do you feel about Gannon and what he's done this year so far?
Yeah, I hated Schwartz in the end. He had such a punchable face, and I hope Gannon doesn't turn into that. But once again, I think we just had that bad taste in our mouth as fans. So Gannon also got off on the wrong foot. Just looking at some of the games here, fellas, we have Cowboys ring up 41 on us. Chiefs ring up 42. If I'm looking at this correctly, no other team has scored more than 30 points on us. And then you look at some of the last few weeks here, we let up
the Raiders up a 33 spot.
Thanks, Mike.
But overall, just real quick, the Eagles defense is eighth in points allowed. Overall, it tied for eighth with the Packers. So just as a stat sort of league-wide, just to step back in terms of points allowed. And that's part of what's frustrating. Go ahead, Matt.
That's eighth best, correct? Or eighth. Am I understanding they've that correctly?
So I guess like the number one team would have let up the fewest yards.
The fewest yards.
So they're eighth in that ranking of the league, tied with the Packers, I believe. I looked it up this morning.
Got it. You look at the past few games, 13 against the Giants, 18 points against the Jets, 17 against Washington, 10 against Giants. Now, yes, that is a lot of NFC lease right there that we're playing. Jets are garbage, but still, it's a pro football game where we're not letting up a lot of points. Here's what it comes down to, Chris. I believe your question is, will Gannon be back? Will we see Gannon again? Yes, we will see Gannon again. He hasn't done it enough. There hasn't been that big of an adverse effect by him for the Eagles to justify moving on from him after 1 year. I also think he came from the Colts with Sirianni. There's definitely a connection there. So if Jeffrey Lurie is sitting Sirianni down at the end of the year and saying, what are your thoughts on Gannon? I think he's going to have Gannon's back. And I think you do see Gannon again next year, whether you like it or not. Mike?
Great point.
Yeah, no, I'm in agreement with pretty much everyone. Chris, I'm not – just to refresh, are you for bringing Gannon back?
I guess I'm for it because, to me, the enigma is that they really have been successful when you step back and look at it on paper, but the watching experience has been really frustrating for the players that they have. It seems that they're, like I said, too conservative, it's too basic, it's too laid back, and especially early on in the game, and they're allowing teams like – Washington just last week to just drive down the field without much resistance. It makes for a really frustrating watching experience. But when you stand back and look at the statistics, being one of the teams that's letting up the fewest points in the league and then having the turnover numbers that they have, it is impressive. So it sort of leaves me in the middle of the road. But I want to see how he plays in a playoff situation. I think that's going to have a lot to do with sort of how I view him, because his biggest problem has been good quarterbacks, and they're going to face a good quarterback. I was going to get to this later, and we will sort of put it on the shelf for the end of our podcast tonight, but you're talking about, again, possibly Tom Brady, possibly Matt Stafford, possibly Kyler Murray. I think those are the three teams that are sort of in consideration for that first round. So it's going to be a quarterback with some ability, and it's going to really be on Gannon, I think, to show what he can do in that spotlight. It's no longer the regular season. You're not sitting back and seeing what the other team has or the other quarterback has. You got to get after him early to kind of create, you know, some pressure early and hopefully to create some turnovers, which is something he preached kind of all off season. So
Chris, just real quick. So it seems like we're all in agreement that Gannon will be back next year, and mm-hmm. You know, he did enough to deserve it. I was going to say it seemed to me that as the season went on, there were a couple things that happened. One, he must have been listening to his players. You know, there was the big incident where Fletcher Cox said he wasn't being utilized properly to the media. And then it seemed like there were some changes that ensued, maybe a better communication between players and coaches. I think you saw more aggressive style of play, which suited the personnel of the D-line. as well as Darius Slay. You really saw Darius Slay come into his own this year as an Eagle. And I think his playing a lot more press coverage as the year went on really led to that. So I think Gannon trended the right way as the season went on. I will say it's been really frustrating. There have been certain games where the Eagles needed to get the ball back in order to try to win the game, and the defense couldn't give us the ball back. And we ended up losing the game that way. That's very frustrating. I also think you need to kind of watch games with a different lens when you're assessing the defense, because it's very frustrating, you know, when you want the defense to get off the field, get the offense back on. And what ends up happening is they score first down and you're like, fuck. And then you get all reinvested in it all over again. And, you know, it's a real kind of like up and down mental thing that you as a fan have to ride out. This year I've been trying more to not get so deflated when a team picks up a first down on the Eagles defense. It really is what's the end result of that drive that matters. And you can make an argument for field position, but really it comes down to points and what happens at the end of that drive. I don't know, Andrew, if you had something.
No, that's a good point, but that's so counter to who we are as Eagles fans. I mean, every throw, every play, we're going to overanalyze and we're not going to wait till the end of the drive. But I do think you're right in terms of assessing success shouldn't be so predicated on this individual, whether or not they get a first down or not. But the frustration is always going to be there. I think it's in our blood. So, yeah. Matt, you were...
Yeah, Mike, I think we do harp on the lows more than the highs, but what comes to mind for me was the Chargers goal line stand early on in the game. That was definitely a high. Yes, we go on to lose to the Chargers, but, Darius Slay scoop and score. There's been a lot of highs and a lot of exciting plays on defense this year, but I do agree. As an Eagles fan, we tend to go negative. It's hard not to.
Yeah, I think part of that is just also keeping it real and not, you know, getting too high or too low, because we've been so disappointed in the past, and it's really difficult to impress us, I feel like. But let's sort of cap this a little bit, our macro perspective here. Who would you guys say, in your opinion, and maybe we can decide as a collective podcast, or at least come up with one or a few here, but who would you say is the offensive MVP of the regular season, obviously the postseason, and one more game still to go that we'll touch on against the Cowboys, which doesn't have much bearing on what will go on moving forward. But so far, who would you guys say is the offensive MVP?
Matt looks like he's
giving
ready.
It to a group. I'm kind of inclined toward the O-line, to be honest, instead of isolating one player.
How do you not look at the captain, Jason Kelce? I mean,
I think that's a great one.
Yeah, he's coming close to a Hall of Fame career. I mean, you can't deny it with another Pro Bowl. Yes, he needs another All-Pro. But four All Pros, five Pro Bowls, and a Super Bowl. You would have to, first ballot Hall of Famer, but you would definitely have to start thinking Hall of Fame. And he's just consistent. 157 games played over his career, another 16, about to be 17 games played this year. It's consistency. That's what you need. That's what he gives us. He's my offensive player of the year.
It doesn't it feel like he could play for another like five seasons, even though he's tempted retirement the last three? You bring up a good point. He's seemingly getting better somehow. But don't sleep on, you know, Mailata, man, what a season he's had to step up into the role, starting role, own it and dominate it. And equally on the other side, I mean, Lane, you know, going through what he went through and handling his business and dealing with, some mental struggles and, you know, just being a strong individual and a passionate individual and inspiring the rest of the line. I think
that aspect, and his play has backed it up too. I mean, the guy is all time on the right side there. So,
awesome.
Yeah, I think you can go up and down the line and probably pick out a number of a number of positive things. So,
yeah, the only thing I'll add to that is, if you take away the offensive line from this team, none of this season would have been possible. The whole reason that we had success this year was what Sirianni tried to do, throwing the ball, being a throwing first team, it wasn't working. If we didn't have an offensive line, we wouldn't have had a run game to build our win off. So I really like this. I good looks, Matt. Good looks, Andrew and Chris. It's got to go to the offensive line. Without them, the season would have crumbled, and we'd be looking for a new quarterback.
Might be right.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I think if there were some honorable mentions, I think it's got to be the offensive line in terms of MVPs, and primarily Jason Kelce, because I think through the lane stuff, through Mailata's growth periods and all that sort of stuff, he's that rock. But to give it to the collective, I think honorable mentions, I think we have to bring up Devontae Smith, who's 37 yards, excuse me, from breaking Deshaun Jackson's rookie receiving record. And I think has just impressed in a lot of ways, mostly in the sense of being clutch. I mean, some of these toe tap catches the last few weeks have just been so impressive. And Andrew had used this phrase to describe Devontae that I keep going back to, as advertised. It's not often we get a player that's as advertised, especially at the receiver position, whether it be free agent, draftee, whatever. So he's just been excellent this year. The other one I want to bring up, and maybe it might go a little bit under the radar, and unfortunately he suffered another injury, but I think Jordan Howard has been a huge part of this team's success.
Yes.
Especially as the offensive line has been so successful, I think they love a player like Howard who's just bowling people over. And if you look at his carries and the way that the possession is kind of divvied up, he's not making a huge impact on the game in terms of snaps, but it's the quality of the snaps. The guy's always falling forward. So I just wanted to make mention of him. Other than Howard, is there anybody else that you would say, you know, we got to give this guy props in terms of offense? I've been impressed by people here and there, but not over that long stretch. And I think when we're talking macro, that's what we're really talking about. Anybody else, or should we talk
Matt,
about
Matt, don't do it. I know.
I want to do it. I want to do it. But come on, Dallas Goedert.
I totally agree with you, Matt.
He's come that's a long way, and he's on the position. Ertz isn't here anymore. He stepped up, and he's the number one tight end. And yes, there's been a couple drops.
He's an impressive
player. Argue about, but the guy stepped up as the number one tight end when Ertz left town.
I agree that he had a great season, and I think calling him impressive, I don't know. I'm still not there.
Wait, you're not on the Goddard fan?
No, Mike, they're Goddard haters.
Oh man.
Chris is on the Goddard. I misspoke there.
I think Goddard is a player, especially because he hasn't had playoff experience, much in the way of playoff experience. I think he's a player who might end up proving himself in the playoffs in a bigger way. But as far as being a receiving target, it's him and it's Devontae Smith. And Goddard has got size, you know, differential. And for the most part, and they mic'd him up, excuse me, this last game, and he was using a phrase that I think Chris Long introduced to the team when he was still with them, that the play doesn't care who makes it. And people were really like vibing on that on the sidelines. But when you watch Goddard get open, he's wide open. He's wide open. Somebody's not right on him. For the most part, he's wide open. If he's not, it's because the ball was thrown into a traffic-y kind of area. But he has this way of kind of separating. I think he's got to tame it, though. He's got this thing where he's not – it's almost like he's still like kind of growing into whatever his skill set is. There's something about it where there's still some growth needed, in my opinion, where even on that play, and I know it was a freak accident where it hits off his heel, that part's not his fault, but he just looks so like lackadaisical. You know, that whole part of it, I just want to see like a little bit more like juice from the guy. And maybe that's not his personality, but I have to see that a little bit more. And I feel like he's a big part of Jalen Hurts getting into his rhythm a little bit earlier in the game. So he's a good one. Let's talk defensive MVPs. Who would be your defensive MVP for the 2021 regular season?
Um,
I mean, Slay just seems like the easy pick, but I think it has to be, right? That guy shut down some really good wide receivers. I don't know why he's actually not in talks, for like defensive player of the year. He doesn't have the numbers. Obviously, like, you know, somebody who racks up 20 sacks is going to get it. And he doesn't have the picks that Diggs does. But yeah. Diggs, aside from the interceptions, he's like the Asante Samuel. Like, he still gives up. He gives up, you know, a ton of receptions and yards. But
that's actually a really good comp. You know, I love a good comp. That's a really good comp.
Yeah, and I think that actually does a bit of a disservice to Asante. But in the same light, like Asante jumped the ball. He wanted those picks, and he got those picks. But he couldn't tackle for.
He's been Johnny on the spot too for several picks this year. So maybe a little luck.
I feel like our secondary Darius Slay. By the way, we should have like a lot more receptions.
No, not Darius Slay. Sorry, Diggs. Diggs has been Johnny on the spot for. No,
Darius Slay. When I was at the Eagles Giants game, he had one just like hit him in the chest right on the goal line. So I mean, you know, he's had a couple where he's missed, and I know Maddox has missed one or two, Nelson's missed one or two. So they've definitely had, you know.
Slay had the one in the. He had the sun in his eyes.
That is brutal.
It makes sense with him also getting the Pro Bowl nod. Honorable mentions. I agree with Slay, but I'm just kind of going to honorable mentions. I think you have to look at Javon Hargrave, even though his season is kind of quieted down. He's just been so disruptive. He's a guy that I think really stands to be, if they're going to win a playoff game, he's going to play a huge role in it. The other player I want to bring up, other than Maddox, I mentioned him also. I think Maddox has really shown himself to be a solid slot corner and has even made plays behind the line of scrimmage that have been impressive. But the Eagles just had a hole at the linebacker position that T.J. Edwards and Singleton seem to have filled. But to me, T.J. Edwards – but I think – and no disrespect to Singleton, I really think T.J. Edwards has just flown all over the field and made plays all over the place. And it wasn't until they started playing him that they really had any security with that middle part of the defense. So he would be another honorable mention for me. So we got Darius Slay as the MVP, Avante Maddox, and then we'll give it to both linebackers. Anybody else? I have been impressed with Milton Williams of late.
And Josh Sweat.
Yeah, but
again, but have a good game.
Aggregate of the entire season, it's been more of those former, I think, that we can really, really point to. Speaking of late, Rodney McLeod, 2 interceptions in 2 weeks. That one against Washington was impressive. That slow-mo that they showed at the end there, that was a heck of a catch.
That was great.
Let's look forward a little bit, but before we do, let's break to do a little game of Eagles alma maters. So who would like to start us?
We need a theme song.
We need a theme.
It's Eagles alma
mater. Right. We need some kind of like Price is Right sort of drop.
Yeah, it's like we, you know, if only there were some musicians that were a part of this podcast that could record that.
I know. It didn't even have to be like a long thing, just a short ditty, Mike. Jeez. All right. So let's we'll
come in right up.
Drafted players. And I honestly don't remember the ones that I've asked you before, so I'm going to try to remember back. So we got Eagles drafted players, Eagles free agent players, and then for today we'll do top NFL running backs. Matt, let's start with you.
Oh, Jesus. I guess top NFL running backs. And may I just say, special teams player of the year, Jake Elliott, great year.
Yes.
Wow. Now, we had a conversation.
I don't think we should discuss.
We don't do any props just yet.
We not want to go to the nickname. Should we not?
No, because then we're gonna have to go NC-17.
Okay, all right. Well, let's leave it on the shelf. And you know what? Maybe we do that until if he gets the playoff win and plays a crucial role in it. Maybe we dive deep on that. But
there we go,
Matt. Let's give you a top NFL running back, Matt. Where did Alvin Kamara go to college?
Ooh. My man down, TCU.
Incorrect.
Yeah.
What do you like to steal?
Well done, Michael.
No.
He wasn't.
Tennessee.
He wasn't a Badger, right? It's
Tennessee.
Ooh, nice. That's good. Yes.
Nice. Okay. Mike, I'll go to you next. Running back, Eagles draft pick, or an Eagles free agent?
Let's go Eagles free agent.
Mike, where did LeGarrette Blount go to college?
LeGarrette Blount went to Oregon.
Yes, sir.
Plays Zen and victory music.
All right. Was that an applause for your for yourself?
That's just the correct chord.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. Nice. Yep. Maddie, I'm sorry, Andrew. What category would you like here?
What were they again?
Eagles drafted players, Eagles free agents, and top NFL running backs.
Let's go free agents.
All right. Andrew, where did Malcolm Jenkins go to college?
Ohio State?
Yes, sir. Very good. Boys, I'm impressed. Everybody in round one. Well,
yeah, Matt had command.
Andrew really has two if we're allowing for that, which, you know.
We are. We certainly are.
So Andrew has two. Maddie has none. Mike's got one. Maddie, we're back to you, buddy.
Okay. I will do drafted players.
All right. Matt, let's see here. Where did Jordan Matthews go to college?
Was Macklin Missouri or was he Missouri? That's
Oh boy. Macklin was Missouri. I'll help you out.
All right. he's a first round pick.
Final answer.
I don't know.
Oh, it's Vanderbilt.
It was a Vandy Ooh. Boy.
Yeah.
Is that what Ooh. You were signaling there, Andrew?
No, I thought it was Georgia Tech. I was going GT.
I thought you were going TCU.
Nah.
Oh. All right, so that's got Kamara again. Went. Andrew with two, Mike with one, and Matt with none so far. Mike, what would you like? Let's go one more time around, and then we'll call it.
We'll do running backs.
All right. Mike, where did Christian McCaffrey go to college?
But he got cat.
Drew Staley.
Are you Googling this, Mike? I can see a reflection in your glasses.
I'm Googling in my mind.
South Kakalaki?
Where did he go?
Christian McCaffrey.
Gosh, I feel like I should know this.
Do we have a timer here?
Yeah, play it. Well, start playing your countdown.
It's up if we do.
Let's go. I'll go LSU.
Christian McCaffrey went to Stanford.
Fudge.
Well, now it is NC-17. Thanks a lot, Mike. No, I'm kidding. All right, Andrew, round us
out. I talked to that bomb earlier.
All right, last one here.
What do you got, Andrew?
Dealer's choice on category.
Okay. Let's see here. Andrew, where did Freddie Mitchell go to college?
UCLA.
Yes, sir. Andrew, yeah. Andrew has ruled the day when it comes to Eagle Roma. Let's
give me the belt.
Give him the ring of ding. All right, let's talk a little bit about this game tomorrow. The Eagles are going to be hosting the Cowboys in what many people feel is going to be sort of a meaningless game that's going to feature a lot of backup players. What, if anything, are we hoping to see as just as a group of fans? What are we hoping to see tomorrow? I'll start by saying I'm hoping to see a good amount of Kenny Gainwell and what he can do in the passing game. in the running game. I think he'll be featured a good bit, and I want to see what he can do. Let him open it up a little bit, let the other guys rest a little bit. But that would be a guy that I'd really like to see make some plays tomorrow. Matt.
I'd like to see nobody get hurt, and I'd like to see Devontae Smith break DeSean Jackson's single season receptions for a rookie.
All right, so you brought it up. You brought it up, and I think it's a topic that's been around. So do you give him the opportunity to break the record, a series or two? If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And then you pull him. How do you look at that? From a coaching standpoint, you have a game next week against a playoff opponent, and he's your best receiver by far.
Is this really going to turn into a preseason game? We think all starters are going to be out.
I'm not leaning either way. I'm just kind of, this is a topic that people have been talking about. And I think given that they've clinched the playoff berth prior to this game, it puts it into question. If you're asking me, I probably would play them for like a series or two, just so that they have some momentum, then let them, let the backup sort of take over the game. And whether he gets the record then or not, you know, whatever happens sort of happens. That would be my approach, because that's what Hurts has said he wants to do. And a lot of the offensive players have said that they wanted to do, to sort of keep their rhythm or their momentum going. So I don't want to look at it that way, but I do think that they need to play it a little bit safe here, if nothing else, with COVID.
Yeah. No, I agree. Get him his reps, get him out of there, but he's still a young guy and he needs his reps. So I expect at least a quarter, maybe the first half out of him. I know he's our number one guy, but I still see a half out of him, and he should be able to get 34 yards and a half.
Okay. Let's hope he does. And I'm sure that'll be something highlighted on the broadcast. Let's send it around a little bit. Mike and Andrew.
Yeah, I was going to say that it'll be interesting to see what happens. I could see it being somewhat of a preseason game, with maybe play in the first half and then Sirianni pulling players. The flip side of that, it would be a shame to get somebody hurt in the second half of tomorrow's game. So I think you'd play that carefully if you're Sirianni. I don't really care. I'd just like the team to be healthy coming out of tomorrow.
Andrew?
I want one tackle from Ryan Kerrigan. Just one.
That might be the best answer.
Just one.
That's so fair.
Thank you.
I think he has zero statistics on the year.
Maybe one hurry. I think he got one hurry. Ryan Kerrigan.
He might have half a tackle. I want him to have a solo tackle. No.
Never have the Eagles been so bamboozled and so hoodwinked in free agency.
I think they're
such high pedigree who killed them. He is literally Al Horford when it comes to the Eagles. He is that level
Andrew
of like.
Bynum.
I think I might have on a pod compared him to maybe he could be the Chris Long this year, which, man,
not a good look, Andrew.
I'm not saying
tell you what, that
whether I said it, well. I definitely thought it, and yikes. Yeah, that,
wow.
This
okay,
guy,
so I can appreciate that. Hopefully Ryan Kerrigan registers a statistic. Matt, what do you got to wrap this up?
I'm just seeing 3 tackles in 8 games played, 0 sacks. That's 3 solo tackles from Ryan Kerrigan on the season.
Well, that's 3 times as many as I thought he had. So,
yeah.
All right. So let's skip ahead a little bit to talk about the wild card round. It looks as though the Eagles, as I mentioned earlier, will face Tampa Bay most likely, I think, given all the odds and scenarios, the Rams or the Arizona Cardinals, and would be traveling to any of those teams. Who, in your opinion, would be the most favorable matchup, given everything that we know about the Eagles through the regular season?
Cardinals have stunk the last few weeks. They've been a garbage team.
They did.
Lost the Lions at the spot. You know, they had a real chance to sort of send themselves into a momentum there, and lost to the Lions in what I thought was just a horrible game on their part. The Cardinals, that is, Matt. That was just that was a stinker for them. But sorry, Mike, what was your point there?
They were slumping, but they are coming off a nice win last week.
Against Dallas.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I go back and forth with Arizona. I'm still a little bit up in the air on this. All these teams have a ton of firepower, so it's going to create a tough matchup regardless. But who would you favor if you had to choose between the three, Mike?
Nah, man, I mean, that's kind of a toss-up. I'm going to say I doesn't really matter at this point. And the Bucks are on the table, too. I do not want to see the Bucks. I will say okay. that.
I'll go over it again. I said Tampa Bay, the Rams, or Arizona are the teams that we could face. So you're saying you don't want to see Tampa Bay. But I do think, by all odds, it is kind of the most likely scenario that we play them. But it's still a chance that we either play the Rams or the Cardinals also.
Yeah. I like my chances against the other three.
Okay. All right, Andrew.
Yeah, this one's a weird one because I honestly think that all of these teams are beatable. So
Tampa's beat up right now too.
Tampa's beat up. They had to come back and beat the Jets. They had a tough game against the Jets. They've kept bad teams in. So not to say that we're a bad team, but it's not like we're going to go into Tampa and get our doors blown off. I don't think Arizona can blow our doors off either. The Rams are pretty high powered and could, it depends what Stafford does, but Stafford also has had games where he's looked high terrible. Yeah. And throwing like three picks. So it's tough to read. They're all going to be competitive games. So I don't know if there's, you know, I don't know if I lean one or the other, but let's go with Arizona. I think we can beat Arizona.
I think we can beat Kyler Murray. I think that's what it comes down to for me. And I do think Arizona has a good defense, but given the way that they played, I watched that Lions game and was just in complete disbelief because Arizona was just steamrolling teams at that point in the year. They go into Detroit and they just get kind of just blown out. Didn't even show up kind of a game. So I think that would be really favorable. I do think that's the least likely scenario. Again, yeah. If you're just looking at odds, but stranger things have happened. And for a lot of other teams in the league, we're in a unique position where we don't typically find ourselves looking at the last game of the year where it doesn't matter, or it could be a preseason game or any of these narratives. We're kind of clinging to it as our last chance to do this or that. That's the scenario for most other teams in the league. So I suppose we'll know by Sunday night, but it's interesting to get the different situations. And I think Matt makes a good point. As far as Tampa Bay goes, they have a lot of injuries and Brady has not looked great over the last few weeks. I still don't want to see Brady in the playoffs, but there's something about that being the most likely scenario, given their injury problems, given the way the Eagles have been playing. I don't think that these other teams are looking at the Eagles as a favorable matchup. I don't think any of these three teams are looking at the Eagles going, all right, I'm glad we got the Eagles. I really don't. Now that might just be sort of my fan perspective and midnight green colored glasses, but I really do. I do think that the running game and the way that the defense is played is imposing. And I think that it at least makes them competitive, hopefully, as Mike mentioned earlier. So with that, we'll wrap it for tonight. Boys, good job on the podcast. And we'll say go Birds. We'll get together hopefully before this playoff game, once we know who their opponent really is next week. Go Birds.
Go Birds.